There's a word I'm looking for here. Well, whatever. They all paid already.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Tim Wick, Nick Glover, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we are talking about churches who want to reopen earlier than everybody else because they're churches and God and wine, bleh.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Tim Wick. I'm joined, as always, from across the void of the Twin Cities. I am joined by my co-hosts, Nick Glover.
Hey!
And Molly Glover.
Molly Glover, hello. It's me.
Hello. And we are here to do something that we haven't done in a while. We're going to talk about religion.
Yeah! I hope we're going to shit on it.
Yes, I think we are. We were talking about this. There's a lot of conversation around the church these days and churches being able to open because they are, quote, essential services.
Yes.
And we were like, do we want to talk about this? Because honestly, we're kind of an echo chamber. We're just going to be like, fuck that. And then we were like, you know what? Y'all listen to us because we're atheists, right? And every now and again, we need to do some atheist shit. So,
and there's nothing more atheist than shitting on the Catholic Church.
Yes, because I mean, and honestly, I think what we might do in this episode is show that there might be nothing more Catholic than shitting on the Catholic Church.
Well, that's an exciting twist.
So let's frame this for you because this is going to go up in a couple of weeks. Who the hell knows where we'll be by then?
Right.
Our governor.
It's currently the end of May.
It's the end of May. Our governor, Governor Tim Walz, has been slowly opening up the state, or as they say, turning up the dials. Because our state has dials that show us where we are in the opening up process. I think there are
those of us. Our state's run by an educator, and he likes to use graphics and educational
science
terminology for
and listen to scientists and health professionals to make decisions.
It's crazy.
It's weird. But he still is starting to open up the state. Some of us might think it's a little early, but it's certainly not as early as what happened in Wisconsin, which we might address in a little bit.
And he's also, at this point, we're only allowed to get together in groups of 10 people or fewer.
Right.
And that's supposed to be like family gatherings, like, you know,
opening up your circle a little bit.
Yeah, not strangers necessarily.
And that's likely to happen through the end of June. The end of June, we might turn up the dial a little more, might get to 25 people. Mm-hmm. Some restaurants are being permitted to reopen, but they have to serve people outdoors. They cannot go over 50% capacity.
No, they're capped at 50 people completely.
They're capped at
50
people.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Including staff.
Unless 50 people is more than
certain percentage.
Yes. It's like a 25% or something.
Yeah.
And right now it can't even be indoors. You can't keep people inside. And some other things like that. But one thing that he said he was not going to reopen yet was churches.
Mm-hmm.
And
because they are, I mean, the church by our house, the Churchstrosity we've mentioned, can hold 3,000 people.
Yeah.
It can seat 3,000 people.
And if you've ever been in a church, and I know that many atheists have been in churches because for some of us, that's why we're atheists. But nonetheless, if you've been in a church, you know that actually they're not set up for social distancing very well.
No.
Almost every church I've ever been to expects group singing, which in current situation is a really bad idea. And other things like this. And so the governor was like, no churches yet. And the bishop of the Twin Cities Catholic Diocese, actually, when this first started, sent what was a very good letter saying, you know what? We don't need to be open for people to worship.
Yep.
It was perhaps one of the better worded letters from a religious leader anywhere.
Yeah,
it's almost like he realizes that if their God they worship is truly omnipotent and everywhere, then they can worship from anywhere and get their message there.
It's weird.
I figured that out when I was 11 and I got shot down.
Yeah. It's weird how 11-year-olds figure that shit out and adults are like, well, that's really smart. So I'm going to have to try and figure out a way to explain why it's stupid. And I'm going to feel dumb when I do it. But nonetheless, so Walls made his latest announcement about restaurants and stuff like that. And churches, including our bishop, went nuts.
Yeah.
And they were like, why can there be 50% capacity or 50 people in a restaurant, but people can't come to church? God needs these people in church.
Now, keep in mind, the churches were not closed. They just couldn't have more than 10 people in them.
Right.
Like, that's the thing. They keep saying, oh, the churches have been closed. No, they're not. You just can't have more than 10 fucking people in your church.
Same rules as everyone else. Yeah. You're not special.
Yeah.
And they couldn't hold services.
Because they couldn't do it with 10 people.
Sorry. Same rules for everyone else that wasn't considered an essential service, I should say.
Yeah.
Because churches aren't essential. They don't provide anything essential, and whatever they do provide isn't unique to churches.
They don't deliver something that cannot already be delivered to your home for free.
Right.
And they don't contribute to the economy.
Right.
Right.
In fact, they take from the economy.
Yep.
So the not just the diocese in St. Paul, but countrywide churches started to pitch a fit. So our president said he's going to declare churches an essential service.
Yep.
So the governors have to force them to stay open, which doesn't make a lot of sense when you're a leader of a party that believes in states' rights. But
right. And also, that's something that Walls, like, recently said, like, that they were getting pressure federally.
Yeah.
So
and indeed, Walls has now allowed churches to open at 25% capacity.
I think that's capped at 200 people.
It's
something. They did put a cap on it so that, like, for example, the Churchstrosity can't open at 25% capacity of 3,000 seats.
Well, and having been to the Churchstrosity once for an episode that you can go back to listen to, I think there were 200 people on that fucking stage. So basically the celebrants can be there and none of the people.
Yeah.
But then they ought to be able to use video. I'm pretty sure they have a really boss video set.
They've had it online since day one. Yeah.
And indeed, my mother's small Catholic church has as well. We'll get to my mom in a little bit. So that's what's going on, is the churches are now being given permission to open up slightly. But I think the other thing that we need to talk about, though, is there have been a lot of reports of outbreaks that have come directly from churches that defied the order of the governors. And I should point out, the main thing about the letter from the bishop of our diocese was he said he was advising his churches to defy the governor's order and to hold services anyway.
Because render unto Caesar what is not Caesar's.
Yeah. Right.
And he also said they were entering into a lawsuit to force the governor to allow them to open.
And that's part of why I mean, it seems that coupled with the federal pressure that Walls hinted at is why he caved. And in the statement he put out when he announced that they were letting them open to 25%, he was like, look, I'm not happy about it. Like, I don't think this is a good idea. Like, do I think that's a safe number? Absolutely not. But, you know, this, and he even says something like, we've had pressures from various places that are, you know, leading us to this decision, and it's the decision we have to make, which is about as Minnesotan as you can get and be in a position of power to say, like, no, fuck these guys. They're being babies and they're going to throw a tantrum that's going to get people killed.
And he probably had some legal experts on his side going, I don't know if we're going to win or lose this case, but it's sure going to be a pain in the ass. And it just so I think we don't need to spend a lot of time, the three of us, being like, fuck churches. They don't need to fucking open. They are non-essential. They can do their services remotely. They should do their services remotely. They are tax exempt, so it's not like they're paying property tax on their buildings. And it just – is really ridiculous that they're throwing this fit. So I guess I don't know what we're talking about.
Well, what's frustrating, it's frustrating that they would be considered essential, because right. the people that I know who are essential employees are in healthcare of for animals or humans. They are involved in the food supply chain.
Right.
They are involved in clinics and pharmacies, and or they are working and they're working, you know, in retail at certain places. And I understand the argument that it feels, if you are a deeply religious person, I could see how it would feel bad to know that Target is open, or, you know, however you, maybe you think capitalism is a sin or whatever. And so you're angry that people are able to be open and making money, you know, and things like that, but that they can't go to the church where they feel that that is a better use of their time. And I think that a lot of this is coming from, well, if my thing can't open, why does your thing get to be open? That's sure. not fair.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head too when you said open and making money.
Yeah.
Because a church, the fact that they're talking about bringing a lawsuit against the government is frustrating to me on a number of levels, because it's ignoring the medical science and epidemiological information we have, and all the safety plans to minimize this risk to people. It's using their tax exempt money that was given to them as a charitable organization, a religious institution, to sue the government, which is going to cost all of us money
mm-hmm,
because right. it's our tax money. That's
and they're
going
not
to-
putting money in.
No,
they're not right. contributing any money right. to the pool that they are removing that money from.
Right. Yep. So the church is costing us money by existing and not getting taxed. They're taking the money that they took from, well, it was given to them or by duped or by, you mm-hmm. know, religious people. That money isn't going to the economy in the same way. It's not getting taxed in the same way. It's not getting spent in the same way. They're taking that money and suing the government, which is going to cost us money by tying up the courts, all the judges and prosecutors and everyone involved. It's going to cost us all individually money. And then if for some reason they won, there's a cost then to the taxpayers as well. And none of that is even taking into account the public health risks and the public health portion of this conversation.
Which yeah. they don't see, and which there's evidence to show opening up the churches is a bad idea from yeah. a public health perspective. It, you know, and I mean, I understand the Republican Party doesn't care about their people and whatever, they'll sacrifice whoever they need to. But what is strange to me is when you've got evidence that opening up your churches is causing outbreaks and killing people.
Yeah.
And the churches that are going to open up first are the churches that are going to be filled with people who are going to vote for you. Wouldn't it be better to leave them closed? I don't know.
What's really frustrating to me is that, you know, the number of people who are religious, who are younger than 50, is decreasing.
Yep.
And even among those who are younger than 50, who would say that they are religious and who would say, oh, I believe in God, or who would say, I'm a Christian, they aren't going to church regularly. That's not usually their deal. If there are, it is a minority in their age group who are weekly church attendees. You know, I know a lot of people who are like, they would call themselves Christian or Catholic even, who go to church maybe twice a year tops, right?
Right, Christmas and Easter.
And they would tell you that it's important to them, but right. they don't go weekly. You know who goes weekly? The elderly. You know who goes weekly? People who are sick and who are praying, or who have someone in their life who is sick, who they are going, they feel they have to go weekly
people
to pray
that
for.
People are vulnerable for one yep. way or another.
Yep.
Maybe not like medically vulnerable, but they are in a vulnerable position and the church is taking advantage of
it. And they
want
to put them all into the same building.
And they are.
God.
And they are medically vulnerable when it comes to this. Because Absolutely. Like once you get past age 50, you almost certainly have an underlying condition that is leading to the comorbidity with COVID and causing more complications or death. Like that, whenever someone's like, well, if you don't have any underlying conditions, you're fine. Underlying conditions include being a smoker, past or previous, having diabetes, having any chronic illness whatsoever. Like having arthritis, that's considered an underlying condition that they'll put as a,
If you get the flu easily and are more susceptible to respiratory illnesses, that's a pre-existing condition.
And that happens.
It's not even like diagnosable. Yep. That's just like you're more susceptible to them on average.
And that makes me so fucking angry because these people are supposed to be, by their own scripture, shepherds. They're supposed to be people who are leading the flock, who are taking care of the flock. And they're not. They're specifically opening the doors to the barn and going, get on out there, sheep. You need to be free. Yeah,
be free.
Are you afraid of wolves? Wolves kill like 1 out of 100 sheep a year. You're fine.
It's extra ironic because those are the same people that are calling me a sheep for wearing a mask.
I know. Oh, yeah. I love that. The other thing that's interesting is, you know, nationwide, this, you know, polling says the majority of people approve continued measures, right?
Yeah.
This includes religious people. And that's where I want to get to my mom, because my mom is a Catholic. She's been a Catholic her entire life. I've had religion discussions with her. I mean, I'm very respectful, right? I'm not like, mom, you're stupid. But I mean, she knows there's no secret that I am not a Catholic, that I'm an atheist. But she actually wrote a letter to the bishop of the Twin Cities Diocese and asked me to read it.
Hell yes.
And she was like,
let's hear it.
What do you think? And I asked her if it was okay to read it on the air. So I want to read it. This is from a Catholic. And I actually bet you in the Twin Cities and in Minnesota at large, there are probably more of them that think this than agree with the bishop.
Based on what I saw on NPR news posts and the people chiming in to be like, are you fucking serious? You're correct. But I would love to hear your mom's words.
All right, in Minnesota, at least.
In Minnesota.
So here's what mom wrote. Dear Archbishop Hebda, I don't know if that's how it's pronounced, H-E-B-D-A.
That sounds right.
Archbishop Hebda. I strongly disagree with your actions regarding church gatherings in this time of global pandemic. As a leader, you have a responsibility to give sound guidance, to urge people to gather inside churches and to worship with singing, reception of Eucharist, and group prayer, is to invite catastrophe. Sorry, Mom. You're putting lives in danger. You're asking the faithful to choose between your misguided suggestions and the recommendations of thoughtful public health professionals and government leaders. I agree that for many of us, spirituality is an essential ingredient in a meaningful life. But my God does not reside in a building. My relationship with my community of faith does not depend upon physical contact. To have a life of faith and service does not require large or even somewhat size-controlled public gatherings. I'm grateful that Cabrini, St. Francis Cabrini is the name of her church, and many other church communities have learned to make good use of technology. Cabrini's Sunday prayer services are beautiful. I know from conversations with other members that these events provide inspiration as well as a respite from the sad and frightening realities of our world. Our pastor and staff offer support. Our liturgist offers suggestions for prayer and reflection outside of Sunday services. Religious education leaders offer story time for the little ones and their families and learning experience materials for at-home exploration. I applaud the talents of so many and am so grateful for their willingness to learn new ways to share those talents. Of course, I miss the regular in-person worship and fellowship, but Cabrini and I'm sure many other congregations have instituted several programs for staying connected, and our education programs and community activities continue in ways that honor the need to remain safe and well and distant. I serve on a parish committee, and we continue our work as a distance. I am a church musician, and while I greatly miss the opportunity to celebrate in common song, I participate in regular online visits with my music group friends, and I also sing with some of the liturgical musicians who offer new opportunities for worship and song online. Mm-hmm. Creativity abounds. So many gifts to be celebrated. I'm disappointed and angry about your response to the challenges of life in Minnesota in spring 2020. I'm disappointed that you would encourage people to take part in dangerous and unlawful gatherings. I'm angry that you would enter into a lawsuit that will waste valuable time and resources. I hope you will reconsider your position. blessings.
That's great.
So on. Yeah.
That's great.
It is great. And I think that, I mean, as atheists, we harp on religion and the religious from time to time, as I think is fair. But at the same time, there are so many people who are religious who this is not serving in any way.
Well, what I think is really funny is, at least to me, their reasons for wanting to have the churches open are so fucking transparent, because it is very clearly that they are not that at first they were all cool with it, right? They were like, yeah, online services, we got it, but they're not pulling in the money.
Yep.
That is 100% what it is. People aren't donating online, whether it's because they don't have a credit card or they're not set up for that, because
the face-to-face guilt of that not putting something when they pass the plate.
There's not the people. No one can see them. Their neighbors can't see. No one can see if they're.
That's
giving
why
money.
Religious services need to get on Twitch, because when someone gives you a sub or donates you some money on Twitch, it shows up in chat.
Yep.
The person who's streaming is like, oh. Thanks, RiotGirl169.
But they can't.
You're a subscriber.
They're not supposed to be about the money. Yeah. So that's the thing. And because I was asking myself, why now? You know, like, why now when they were fine before, when it wasn't an issue before, and it was all about keeping people safe? Why now? And it's the money. And what's so frustrating about that is how transparent it is. But also, I think that they are shooting themselves in the foot. I think they are going to lose people. And by they, I mean, you know, basically Christianity, any of these faith services, these leaders who are pushing for opening and are telling people to come in anyway, they're going to lose people, whether it's the daughter of somebody who goes to church and gets sick, or it is the parents who, you know, go and they're like, I don't want to bring my kids. You know, why would you suggest that? They are going to start losing people.
Yeah. And they're going to lose people through death. I mean,
they're going to lose people through death too.
They're
going
to lose people through so many.
But to them, they went on to the better reward. That's
right.
The thing, Tim.
Yeah,
that's the problem with your fucking death cults. Is these death cults they aren't afraid to die. It just means they get to go on to the better thing.
They get to go on to the eternal life and be with God forever. But I mean, I think the thing that my mom's letter highlights is just this idea that they aren't serving the desires of their followers. And what's going to happen is you're going to see followers who aren't going to go or aren't going to give as much to the church. And I think that the funny thing is the Catholic Church, I don't think is nearly as much of a problem with cash flow, because they've been raising money for centuries,
mm-hmm.
as the evangelical churches, which are newer, and which, I mean, we went to that Churchstrosity.
Yeah.
And they did, was it two or three offerings over the course
of
an hour?
It was three offerings. They had the one right away when you walked in before things started. And then they did one midway through. And then they also had people available for on the way out if you were inspired.
And then they had another one in the middle for their special missionary work.
Oh, right. Yeah. For the special, that was a special missionary collection. That was going to a special fund for the missionary.
That wasn't raising money for the church. That was raising money for something the church is doing.
Right.
It's totally different.
Yeah.
Also, you just donate, write it off on your taxes in the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you go to a church like that and you realize just how much money they are pulling down.
Yeah.
And how much money that they must be losing right now. Because even with people who are donating online to those churches, and I'm sure they're the uber faithful who are dropping $20 mm-hmm. a week to a church, even though they're not going in person, it's less.
Mm-hmm.
And they need to be open, and they're willing to go as far as lawsuits. But it surprises me again that the Catholic Church, which I don't think needs money.
Right. Well, it's I don't know how much they get from Rome, right? I don't know where they get their funds, but it's possible that, I mean, the Twin Cities diocese has been fighting all of the sexual abuse cases that were brought to light, you know, and having to all that. So maybe they do need money.
That is true. Internationally, they've had to spend all sorts of money protecting those priests. So
yeah,
and they're
really concerned about the most vulnerable people.
Yeah.
Catholic priests.
Yes. Here I think we fall in the major critique I think we've had of religion a lot of the time, which is religion doesn't seem to care about their followers.
Right. And they don't.
It's the same thing with protecting predator priests, where if you cared about your followers, you would be like, no, you don't get to be a priest anymore. And we are going to take the evidence we have and we're going to turn you in because what you did is illegal.
Yep. If they cared about their parishioners and their followers, then they also would care about when they're poor and when they're starving.
Right.
And make sure, like, you know, every time we drive by the Churchtrosity, I have to wonder to myself, how many people in Eden Prairie are homeless right now?
Sure.
Right. And like when they donated all that money to the failed marriage amendment that went nowhere, it was like $50,000. And it's like
at least $50,000.
How many people could they have fed?
How many families in the city could they have fed? Yeah. But I mean, or even among their own parishioners.
How many people who are out of work right now because they're service industry workers or workers in industries that are not going to be able to open for a long time, could they be providing support to instead of spending money on a lawsuit because they want to be open?
It's so frustrating.
It is infuriating. And I think that it just is one of the ugliest parts of this entire pandemic situation.
Yeah, they're not going to come out looking good, to be honest. I think that,
we say that every time there's something that happens.
I know.
Like with like the hiding predators for the Catholic Church. Like, aha, this is the one that'll get them.
But they lose people every time.
I think we should be clear, as given the conversations we've had with people on our podcast, even just a few weeks ago, it's not just the Catholic Church that hides predators. All churches hide predators.
Yep.
All of them. There is no church that is free from that behavior. Yep. All churches hide predators.
It's just disgusting. But right now they're not hiding. They're just predating. They're just predating.
Predating? I don't know.
Predatoring? They're preying.
They're being predatory.
They're praying.
Praying with claws, not with
yes, no,
hands.
Praying with claws. They are preying on the people they're preying on people's need for community. They're preying on people's loneliness and they're preying on people's devotion to their God, which not my thing, but you know what? For a lot of people, it's really important to them. And so to have this authority figure say to you, well, if you really loved God, if you were a really good Catholic, if you were devout, truly, you'd be here. And that's shitty. It's a shitty choice to make.
It's absolutely reprehensible. I'm proud of my mom for writing that.
Yeah. Heck yeah.
And, you know, I always mention I grew up in a hippy-dippy church, and St. Francis Cabrini is definitely a hippy-dippy church. But, I mean, of course it is. It's named after a woman. So it's already way, way on the outskirts of normal Catholicism.
Maybe we'll get a real Liz Estrada situation on our hands here with the women who actually make the churches run. You know, if they all say no further.
If it's a Liz Estrada situation, wouldn't it be the children of the church to fuck the priests?
Gosh.
Wouldn't that?
Technically, he's right, which is the best kind of being right.
All right, we need to move on to five questions. And I need to point out, even before we start, we're down to like two.
This is our penultimate set.
It's our penultimate set. Send us five questions. We're going to beg again.
Please.
It's so easy to think of five questions. We could do it ourselves, but we don't want to. I forgot to ask
last week, and I already regret that decision. We need your questions.
We need them bad.
Yeah. Okay.
You're fired.
But especially since these are questions from somebody who just recently sent in five questions.
Yeah, these are five questions from friend of the show, Bob Alberti, who has sent in like three sets of five questions.
And we
at
absolutely
this point.
Appreciate it, Bob. We don't wish to.
He's the best.
We don't want to make it guilt Bob into never sending us questions again. Right now, he's the only person we can count on. So,
please.
Bob is a vulnerable individual in this climate, and you all are making Bob work harder by writing us questions. So,
these questions are essential to us, actually. Yeah. So, I guess. If you don't want to do the essential work of writing us questions, what can we do?
Come on. All right. Question number one.
Name a museum that you really like and what you like about it.
Oh, man, that's right. These are the art questions.
These are the art questions.
So as an adult, adult, I haven't seen a lot of museums outside our state. Like, I've been to like some of the Smithsonian museums and stuff as a teenager. We went to the Chicago Science Museum together a couple of years ago. But I love the Science Museum of Minnesota.
Oh, yeah.
I always love the Science Museum of Minnesota.
It's a great museum.
I'm so sad that the old building where they were is where the Scientologists are in downtown St. Paul. I feel like that's so disgraceful. But what I love the most about the Science Museum of Minnesota is that so Minnesota used to have a small museum of questionable medical devices.
Yeah.
Which is a very narrow category for an entire museum. That museum folded and went over and donated everything to the University of Minnesota and the Science Museum of Minnesota. And the Science Museum of Minnesota incorporated a lot of their exhibits into their big section on pseudoscience and how to evaluate a source and like, why is phrenology bullshit? And they have all this stuff on display that you can go look at, all this quackery, and it's all a part of this one big section at the Science Museum of Minnesota. And I love it.
Yeah.
I swing by every time.
Yeah. Tim, what about you?
This is a really hard one, and I'm going to slightly cheat by saying the runner-up is the Exploratorium in San Francisco, which is – it's like the Science Museum of Minnesota, but like – exponentially better. I mean, it's all hands-on experimental stuff. And it's a warehouse and it's just filled with kids running around doing science experiments. And there's something
in
about
this
it.
Climate?
There's some, well, I mean, I realize in this climate that's bad, but there's something about the experience that's great. My kids, every time we went to San Francisco, it was like we would go to the exploratorium for a day and we wouldn't see them. Because you couldn't keep up with them.
That sounds great.
You couldn't keep up with them. They were going to all these experiments, and it was cool. That's great. But the real champion, and this is why it's a cheat, is the Smithsonian Museum, because it's got everything.
It's like 30 museums.
Yeah, it's like 30 museums that you just walk from one from an art museum to a natural history museum to a popular culture museum to the Air and Space Museum. It's just
the Holocaust Museum.
To the Holocaust Museum, which is – depressing as hell, but a great museum. Fucking great museum. So anyway, that's it.
All right. My answer is Madame Tussauds Wax Museum in London.
Nice.
Because it's fucking weird.
Yes.
And it's super creepy. And some of the statues are so realistic that it is very, very weird. And some of them are so not realistic that it is hilarious. That you look at it, you're like, what? But like, I watched a special on how that gets made, like all the process. Like they had a celebrity and they did the whole process of from the photos, like all the way through to the making and like laying in the hair and getting the colors just right and like getting samples of the celebrity's hair to get the color just right and all kinds of I thought it was a very fun museum.
I love that museum.
I really enjoyed it. I don't go to museums really that often, but I also very much enjoy the very tiny kawaii museum exhibit at Disney World Japan
in Epcot, Japan.
That's a
There's
good
a
museum.
Very teeny little museum of kawaii things and kawaii culture.
Cute.
Yeah. Okay. Question two. When someone says work of art, what do you picture? For me, it's a painting. If someone says, if someone told me that, in my basement, I have several works of art, I would assume paintings. I would assume like actual, and I would assume that they were like famous or at least reproductions or something, right? I would probably go with, I'm thinking Dutch masters or maybe some like, you know, modern newer guys.
That's the first thing that comes to mind if someone says they have
works of art
would be portraits.
Sure.
But the first thing I think of when I hear works of art is like, David, like a marble statue.
Yeah,
sure, a marble statue. Yeah,
I was going to say if you know that's our that's the kind of answer, then I would probably think statue. I would think sculpture. You know, even though a painting is a completely valid response, but I think the first thing that would pop into my head would be sculpture.
What pops into my head is like an oil painting with a big ornate frame. When I think work of art,
I like
the
ornate
first thing
frames.
I think of. Yes, like this. Like that's that a work one. Of art, like right
that
there.
One. Those of you that are Patreon supporters just saw.
Yes, it's Nick a portrait of Hot camera. Pocket. All right, question three. What is your favorite two-dimensional artwork?
Okay.
And I'll say, if you have a specific one, that's great. If you don't, and you just want to pick like a category, like that would also work for me.
Yeah, I have one. I just have to look up the name of it.
I'm doing the same, actually.
Cool.
There it is.
Well, what's yours, Tim?
It's called Impressions Sunrise by Claude Monet. I think Monet is a painter whom I just fucking love. I love his work. And Impressions Sunrise just has amazing colors. It's boats on, I believe, the Seine during a sunrise. It does not exist. I mean, it exists, but it was stolen. And it was stolen like 20 years ago. Nobody knows where it is. It's probably in some private collector's basement because private collectors are fucking assholes. Even the reproductions of it are I would just love to see that in person. So that's a piece that's always been like something that has been attractive to me as a two-dimensional work of art.
Nick, did you find yours?
Yeah. So, it's not one specific picture, but it is a picture from a series that are all kind of the same all together. There's a comic artist, Phil Noto, N-O-T-O, who he mostly does covers. He did a lot of the Star Wars covers for Marvel. There's like a pretty notable Poe Dameron cover that's people have probably seen. Mm-hmm. But he did these series of Silver Age dinner party photos or pictures from Marvel's most popular Silver Age characters. So it's like Reed Richards wearing a nice suit and Sue wearing a nice dress, and they're like at a dinner party and Ben Grimm is in the background with like a cocktail. Or it's like the X-Men lounging around in a living room that's like a sunken level, like a 70s or 60s style living room dinner party, and like the Inhumans are there and Black Bolt's at a table with a drink and like the other Inhumans are around. And it's just like, it's taking all these superheroes out of their element. It has this kind of out of time or timeless feel to it. Who's the director? Like Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Wes Anderson.
It's like got that Wes Anderson feel where it could be contemporary, but it could be the 60s. Or 70s, you know, and just that series of black and white pictures. I just fucking love them so much.
I'm trying to look it up.
While you look that up, I'll tell you mine. Mine is Megan Lara is an illustrator, an artist who does Art Nouveau portraits of characters, mostly in sci-fi fantasy, but pop culture, horror too. And she has one of Rey from Star Wars that is just gorgeous. And she has this very haunting style where people look both realistic and otherworldly. I don't know. It sounds like they're at odds, but I'll send a link to put in the show notes because her work is incredible. And she has done tons of different characters. She's got, you know, like things from Buffy, and she did, you know, from, Princess Bride, and obviously, you know, things like Star Wars and Star Trek and everything, but Megan Lara, her artwork is amazing.
Sweet. Nice. Okay.
It's called the Hank Pym Photo Archives. I just found out.
Question four.
What is your favorite three-dimensional artwork?
Ah, I knew this was coming.
Mine is the, I don't remember if it's the L, it's the veiled women, the marble statues.
Oh yeah,
where they have the veils that are so fucking incredible that it actually looks like a woman wearing a transparent veil.
Oh yeah, it's amazing.
All carved out of marble. Those just that they literally take my breath away. Like when I could look at them for an hour each, like just gaze at them. I want to touch them. I want to taste them. I know that sounds weird, but I really want to put my tongue on them and see what they taste like. I know. It just it's something about them. They look so soft, and yet so not. It's just so cool. It's so cool. That's a high honor if I want to put my tongue on it. I'm just saying.
I'm not. I'm sitting here not judging you at all.
It's genuinely like the best thing I can do for an object. What about you two?
The sculpture that I remember being most impressed by is Michelangelo's Pietà, which is actually in St. Peter's Basilica in Vatican City. And it is,
I had to get my dig in.
No, it's fair. It's Mary holding the dead Jesus in her lap. And Michelangelo, it's by Michelangelo. He was a great sculptor, but there is something that is so amazingly real about that piece of work. And yes, it's a religious work, and I'm not connected to the religious part of it.
Sure.
But just the way he's able to infuse humanity into an inanimate object is really pretty amazing.
Mary Magdalene, right? Not Mary, his mom?
No, I think it's Mary, his mother.
So what is she, like 70?
No, she was like 16 when she had Jesus.
So, okay, so she's like in her 50s. Sure, yeah. Sure. Like she's probably alive.
Yeah. So she was alive. She was definitely alive when Jesus was crucified, according to the Bible, which, you know, whatever. But and maybe it was that I was shortly after I'd seen the Sistine Chapel, which not blow me away. Because Michelangelo was a sculptor and not a painter. And when you see the Sistine Chapel, I really feel like it shows. But then you see the sculpture and you're like, oh, fuck. He was really good at this.
He's got good movement down the robe. I feel like I've seen like a Jadro Pietà.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Right? Like, yeah, I feel like my grandma might have had that.
I think Pietà is a word for a specific type of artwork that depicts Mary and Jesus.
Sure.
So anyway, it's a really spectacular sculpture and it has always stuck with me.
Nick, what about you?
I can't think of one. Like I don't have anything that's...
What about the Howl's Moving Castle cosplay? That's a three-dimensional piece of art. Or anything like that you can think
of? Yeah, I mean, I have a Kotobukiya. Is a statue company that does like licensed comic book stuff. Several years ago as a gift, I received a Kotobukiya Dr. Doom statue, which is, he's in like a bold arms crossed pose, this cape and hood and all that. And the face mask is magnetically attached and you can change it out with a different version of his face mask to be like more Silver Age or more modern, and it lights up from the bottom, and it's a big fancy deal, and I really love it. But that's what comes to mind.
Nice. By the way, Pietà is specifically a picture or sculpture of the Virgin Mary holding the dead body of Jesus Christ in her lap or arms.
So of course, they would need a special category for that because, you know, it's a death cult.
Once upon a time, you were only allowed to make six kinds of art and they were religious. Yeah, and that was one of the categories.
All right. Question five is, what art do you enjoy creating and why? Obviously, I think we all enjoy creating theater, but let's pick something else because that's an obvious answer.
Comedy, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I super enjoy, and I don't do it as much as I would really like to, but when I have the opportunity to write short stories, I really enjoy creating short stories. They're fun trying to come up with to build a world and to build a character and to build a situation that begins and ends in 3 to 5 pages. I really enjoy that.
I love writing song parodies. I love it so much. I'm really good at it. And I they come naturally to me. I do them fast. And I really enjoy making them sound almost exactly like, not I only changed 3 words, but like I picked words that have a similar sound on the rhyme so that you're hearing something similar, but it's changed enough that you're like, oh, yeah.
Good meter. I really like fabrication or like physical creation of things, whether that's like amateur carpentry or working with other materials. I feel like there's something so, even if it's just putting together IKEA furniture, right? Like, I really love building and making something physically with my hands and with tools. I find that incredibly satisfying.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Awesome. Well,
thanks, Bob. That's five great questions. Feel free to send us in five more great questions. Or if you don't like Bob's questions, you could solve that problem by sending in five of your own, because then we would have to answer yours instead of Bob's next set of five questions. If you're a Patreon supporter, you can send them in and we will bump them to the top of the queue, or at least to the bottom of the Patreon queue, which at the moment doesn't exist. So first Patreon supporter to send in five questions, right to the top of the queue.
Above Bob.
Absolutely. That'll happen. So send us in those five questions. They really are fun to think about. We really appreciate them. And we really appreciate you listening. We know that we are still in some type of quarantine. And we likely will be for most of the rest of the year. It's likely the three of us are going to be recording remotely for the rest of the year. And we really appreciate your support on Patreon. That's helped us make sure we've got equipment to keep this Geeks Without God train rolling. So
lovely.
We are going to, and if you support us on Patreon, you can see our video recording of our episodes, sometimes with animals. Yeah, here we are right here with hands. Okay. Anyway, if you're listening right now, this part is dumb, but if you were a Patreon supporter, you would have seen it. And it would have been less dumb.
That's right. At a $2 or more per month, you get to see our smiling faces.
Smiling faces. And maybe you'll feel a little less isolated. But no matter what, please do stay home. Please do stay safe. We are going to see you next week. Have a good week.
Bye.
Bye. Maybe they just want to reopen because, hey, God needs more angels.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging at geekswithoutgod.com. You can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod, and you can even like us on Facebook.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
He's one of the good ones. I mean that in all of its negative connotations.